Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning from Ice Station Zebra, Dan and Amy. We're at work. Why aren't you at work? Why aren't you at school?
Lazy bums.
Polar Vortex, I hope you took the under because according to my dash, I heard Mike Scott say it was minus 20. My dash,
what is your dash
on my
say?
Finely engineered German vehicle.
Which, by the way, people, he has heated parking, but yeah, what?
Minus 18 when I pulled in. It did not get above minus 18 on my drive from the city to here.
Mine was minus 19.
Yeah. Well,
first car didn't start, so then I had to.
Yeah.
And it was so cold.
How cold was it?
That my radio didn't work. Isn't that strange? Radio did not work. And I was being nice, and I offered people rides.
Cold,
I don't know, but I offered people rides on the way to work. I saw a TSA agent. Listen to that. He had the TSA jacket on, a hat, no gloves. Duh.
Can't afford them because he missed a paycheck.
Thank you. I offered him a ride, but I was fully dressed. I had my face mask on and my goggles and my Viking hat, and I think he was scared.
You often pick up hitchhikers. You're the one who still does that.
I'm the one who's still. Well, he was.
I haven't
was
seen a hitchhiker
out.
Since the last hitchhiker I saw and the first one I saw in forever was when I was in Florida over the holidays, by an on ramp to the expressway. I mean, nobody hitchhikes anymore.
That's stupid. They should hitchhike,
especially because they're good Samaritans. Like you out there, ready and willing to pick them up.
There's some crazy guy. He's always walking his bike on Arlington Heights Road at 4 in the morning. Did you see him?
Yeah, I see him all the time.
Yeah, well, I offered him a ride, too.
It's a motorbike.
Oh, that's what that is?
Yeah, because sometimes he's on it.
A movie? Well, he's not on it today, and I offered him a ride, and he just went, no, thank you.
I'm not even.
He's Asian.
No, sure, obviously, with that impersonation.
Your hat is god awful. That is the worst
What's
hat.
What's wrong with his hat?
You look homeless. What does it say? Does it say Olympia?
Olympia
on it?
Fields.
Oh, my God.
This is a good golf hat. What's wrong with this?
I don't see the problem.
If you're watching on the live stream, help us. Help us. This is like a bad movie, like we're stranded in the Arctic.
I'm just thinking, maybe it's you, Amy.
What?
When you ask somebody to ride with you, did you ever think it might be you?
Well, I should show you what I looked like when I was asking people for a ride.
Yeah.
I looked like a ninja.
I don't want to ride with you. A Swedish ninja.
And I had goggles. I used to live in northern Minnesota, and this people die in this weather.
Also,
I'm not kidding you.
The racially inappropriate impersonations probably don't make it any more welcoming. Yeah. You know,
no
what I mean?
Answer to his question. But it's so cold, no mail today. What else? No DMV, in case you wanted it.
We don't have a DMV in Illinois.
No mail today.
Just
what
saying.
Wait. No mail. What happened to...
Yeah, no mail.
No mail today, and there probably won't be mail tomorrow. And then they already canceled CPS.
Can we hold on to the post office here for a second?
What
is the post office's credo? Neither rain... Nor sleet, nor dark of
snow
night.
Snow or dark of night, yeah.
Oh, there's not. There's no mail in Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois, parts of Missouri.
Wisconsin.
Absolutely Michigan. No mail at all.
So I got that. Now I want an answer to my question. What happened to our intrepid postal service?
I would imagine that it's probably part of their union contract.
Yeah.
That's what I'm.
If anybody's listening, 312-642 5600.
However, they
in.
Do spend
call
their entire day outdoors. So
we're gonna do a.
Yeah.
Well, nobody's preventing the farmers from milking their cows this morning.
I mean, honestly, this is all a bit hysterical to me.
It's not
totally hysterical.
But you didn't have to walk outside your car. I put vegetable oil on the door of my car so that I could get into it because sometimes it freezes. Very smart move. It worked.
What the hell are you talking about?
You put vegetable oil on the frame of your car.
Obviously. Everybody does that.
Well, those of
You're
us who
incredulous.
Park outside, Dan,
Really? I didn't see.
Those of us who park outside.
Oh,
we
is
have
that
to
right?
Get
everybody does that. Everybody in your block does that.
Well, if they're smart, that's what I was a trick I picked up in Minnesota. They said put the oil, so I did that last night, and I started my car around 11 p.m. just to make sure it would work.
Sure, and how'd that work out this morning?
I got in the car.
Yeah, you know what smart people do? They buy a car that works. That's the first thing they do.
Stop it,
Greg in Schaumburg. You're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Well, I, first of all, I would take a ride from Amy in the winter or in the summer, but I prefer the summer with Amy.
All right.
For those of you who cannot see Dan Proft and have always wondered that there were excessive brain cells that possibly we couldn't see,
I'm taking a picture.
I want to confirm to you that based on the hat, where he looks kind of like one of the Muppets, and
I'd say more like a cone head.
Not Homer Simpson, the other guy, Bart Simpson. You know, that vertical V hat is
it's
just
awful.
Covering all of those brain cells.
That's exactly
Can
right.
I tell you,
that's precious cargo, Greg. Precious cargo.
So I'm playing my dad role right now, if I could, for your audience. I'm from Cincinnati, and when we had in 1977 the blizzard, I worked for the Cincinnati Post, and Lou Grant was on TV. I thought it would be kind of fun to go down to the newspaper. Maybe I would get on the editorial staff that day. And much to my chagrin, as I was going down one of the hills, I ran into something I didn't anticipate, and that was all the people that were stuck, that couldn't move. And, you know, you realize then how dangerous cold is. And there was a wrecker that came along and pulled me up this, you know, Queen City Avenue. It was the best $50 I ever spent in my life.
Huh. That's different than the best $50 Jerry Springer ever spent in his life in Cincinnati, isn't it? Thanks for the call, Greg. Appreciate it. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. You got to look
at... How cold was it in your parking garage this morning? What did you... When you turned on your car? What, 40?
I mean, my car likes it like 60. Is where my car enjoys it. So that's what we set the temperature to. Yeah. Now, you also have to look at the positive side, things to do today, right?
People have
the day off, right? So take advantage of it. I'm thinking like Chicago architectural tour up the river.
Oh, the Sea Dog, too?
No lines.
Oh, guess what? Navy Pier's closed, too, and the museums. And some pizza joints are closed, too.
You could do the race to Mackinac on foot today. That could be fun.
And everything's going to be closed tomorrow, and we have no school Friday, so we have a five-day weekend. And
Mike in Union, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer. Hi, Mike.
Mike?
It must be so cold. Mike's phone isn't working. Like, your radio isn't working. Mike?
Mike? Can you hear me now?
Oh, yeah. Okay, Mike. Go ahead.
All right, cool. Hey, word of caution, Dan. The last time I complained about my post office person, my mail started just getting jacked up. You know, just be careful with that. And I'm sure you've seen the show Seinfeld where, you know, that guy was a little batty.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Hello, yeah. Jerry. So. Yes. Thanks for the call, Mike. Look. All right. One of my favorite sitcom characters of all time is Cliff Clavin.
Oh.
So there's a little hat tip to the Postal Service.
So cold. So very, very cold.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. We're asking what you're doing to take advantage of the day off that so many people have gotten. One of our listeners, I had to take my dog out this morning. It's cold, but not too bad.
Oh, come on.
My daughter and husband are heading to work soon. I'm making them chocolate chip cookies to take to the office this morning.
Just
another day for
office.
Some people, but not, you know, for us. But what about for you? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro.
Well, we've been warned to stay inside by our mayor.
If you don't need to be outside at this time, don't go outside.
Thank you. Cover your extremities, wear clothes, blah, blah, blah.
Hey.
It's the same thing, like that pro forma aspect of these things. Like we have to hear from politicians. It's so annoying to me.
That's why I blogged it, because I knew you'd be so annoyed.
Here's another thing that's annoying. I was talking to Mike Scott about this off the air. The number of lives claimed by the weather, where it's broadly defined, like guy gets hit by snowplow, and that's a weather-related death.
It is. Because if it didn't snow, the snowplow wouldn't have been out there. I know a lot of car accidents, too, are weather related, but they are.
That's absurd.
Well, also, you guys, you have to cover your eyes because your corneas could freeze. No, don't take it from me. Take it from Dylan Dwyer from NBC News.
I'm Dylan Dwyer in Minneapolis. We are in the middle of an 80-hour stretch of temperatures below zero with wind chills of minus 50. Every inch of your body needs to be covered, including your eyes, which is why I have these goggles. Your corneas can actually freeze if they're unprotected in the wind and cold for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
Hence the goggles that I wore to work and in the car the entire way.
The only people... dumber and more prosaic than the politicians are those doing the on-site reporting. The people who think your corneas are going to freeze are the same people who think you use vegetable oil to make sure your doors can open when it gets cold out.
Oh my God. It worked. And the engine didn't, but the...
But you were able to get into it.
I got in the car, but the car wouldn't start.
You think you're missing the forest for the trees on the transportation. Vince in Waukegan.
Hey, Dan. Hi, Amy.
Hey.
I'm just looking for a good protest to go to this morning, you know, maybe a protest against capitalism or protest against Trump, maybe a protest to keep the CPS schools open, something of that nature.
All right. Thanks for the call, Vince. You may have a good protest to go to, a protest against anybody who wears a MAGA hat because of this curious story. I think it's a bit curious. This alleged attack on a guy named Jussie Smollett, who's an actor in Empire, the popular television series. It happened in Chicago. It happened in Streeterville, not far from my place.
Oh, I know. It was right by Channel 5. Well, we'll talk about that because I'll tell you what my copper friends told me.
It wasn't by Channel 5.
Well, it's underneath where we'd go in.
No.
No, it's right by the Sheridan, right by Water Street.
Excuse me. He was at the subway on McClure Court. Yeah.
Allegedly. Well, but then he got attacked on North Water and New Street, which is right by the Sheridan. You know, it's underneath there. It's
okay, we'll at 5:38, we'll figure out who has a better knowledge of Streeterville, me or Amy, and see how that turns out.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Roads closed, pipes frozen, albinos virtually invisible. The Weather Service has upgraded Springfield's blizzard from winter wonderland to a class 3 kill storm.
The Simpsons. That's why they've lasted 30 years. Class 3 kill storm. Speaking of which, if you see any catsicles in the Lakeview neighborhood, please return them to Amy Jacobson for a proper burial.
No, one of the reasons why I parked outside, is because I'm trying to keep things closed up so that no wind gets in there, so the temperature doesn't drop anymore in my garage. My two cats are in there. I tried to catch them yesterday with my neighbor. They're not having any of it.
Why don't you just create little spaces outside where they can shelter in place, like little plastic bins, ASPCA tells you to do.
Yeah, I have two plastic bins that they're insulated and they're straw on the bottom, but I have another plastic bin that has a
kitty cat. Like a manger.
Yeah, like it. And they won't. I want to bring the bin inside. With the cats in it, so I tried to clog up the hole and then take the box out with the cats inside, and they were freaking out, and it was bad. It didn't end well, so I'm just hoping. And I've heated water bowl, and I've heat pads for them, but I'm just so scared they're not.
If only people would have listened to Bob Barker, we could have avoided all this ugliness. Have your pets spayed or neutered.
I did. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well,
they're feral cats, and I'll let you know if they made it. And then we are gonna who wore it better. Segment later, I'm going to tweet out a picture of your hat and my hat.
Oh.
We'll see. You know, I'm obviously going to win.
And I think it's rather stylish.
Did you bring gloves to work today, by the way?
Yeah, I have mittens because...
with the string
and
the jacket.
And I wore my Spalding fat suit for additional insulation per orders from the governor. Good grief.
It's a state of emergency today.
All right, I want to take up this case. Made national news yesterday. Jussie Smollett, he's a 36-year-old actor. He's one of the stars of the popular show Empire.
Which was filmed here in Chicago.
I mean, yeah, right.
These people don't know.
Right. He was allegedly attacked in Streeterville. A friend identifying him, someone identifying himself as a friend of Smollett, who apparently lives in an apartment on the 300 block of East North Water Street, called 911 saying that a well-known person had been assaulted and battered after leaving this guy's apartment, and they wanted a report. Smollett told police he was attacked near his friend's high-rise, so this is 300 block of East North Water Street, while walking over to the subway on 521 North McClurg, which is on McClurg between Grand and Illinois in Streeterville, so a couple blocks. And the reason why this has become a national story is because the allegation is two white men, racial and homophobic epithets, and an utterance that this is MAGA country. So that this was somehow like Trump supporter inspired.
As soon as I heard the story, you know, breaking, I was watching Windy City. I don't know why.
Windy City?
Windy City that? Live with...
the two girls, Ryan and Val.
Ryan and Val. Yeah. And I smelled a rat. I mean, they were saying that he couldn't identify his attackers. He also, my copper friend said that he told them to turn off their body cameras before taking his hate crime report.
Now, to be fair, crime victims sometimes do ask police to turn off the cameras when officers enter private residences, according to a police spokesman. But, yeah, that's part of the discussion.
And then also, Channel 9 was saying it was two white guys that did it. Channel 5 just said it was two suspects. They didn't give a race. And Channel 7 said two white guys.
Yeah, and that was manufactured reporting. According to police... Contrary to widespread reports that the alleged attackers were white, Smollett has not identified the attackers by race because the men were masked and wore gloves.
Well, clearly they were targeting him. This wasn't some random crime. It could be a scorned lover. We don't know. But the part that he had a rope around his neck?
So the noose was placed over the friend's neck.
That was the 911 call saying the noose was placed around his neck.
Well, but I'm going to stick with alleged attack here for a minute. Because first, let's tackle the MAGA piece, right?
I didn't hear the MAGA piece until just now, actually.
So Smollett, the reporting was that the attackers said, this is MAGA country.
We're in Trump free zone.
And there were reports, that they wore MAGA hats. During his first conversation with police, Smollett did not say the attackers made MAGA comments, according to a police spokesman. The detail was published by TMZ, and Smollett mentioned it during a follow-up interview with police later in the day, according to police.
Here's another point of contention for me. There are surveillance cameras all over that area where the alleged attack happened, and nothing yet.
They got nothing.
No, and I texted my friend last night, like, where's the picture of the suspects that this happening? And also, too, the creator of Empire tweeted out a picture of him, Smollett, in the hospital because he walked himself to Northwestern Memorial.
After refusing a first responder assistance on site.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, see, now you're saying that, and my friend told me that he went to the hospital, and that's where, then after that, he talked to police. They weren't on site with him. This is a hot mess.
Well, let's go with what police have to say. The actual police.
Police are saying.
Yes. Police denied... I mean, they're denying everything that's being reported. That the race was identified, it wasn't. The misreporting, or certainly the lack of texture reporting, that at first Smollett said nothing about MAGA. He only mentioned that in a follow-up interview. The police denied an ABC report that the FBI had taken over the case. Smollett was said to be reticent to file a police report, even after police arrived. He refused medical treatment on site. EMS services were declined by the friend. Smollett later took himself to Northwestern Memorial. The video, this is Anthony Guglielmi, Chicago police spokesman, tweeting 7 hours ago. Detectives expanded the search area for cameras to be able to provide photos of the alleged assailants in the attack. Thus far, no video of the alleged assailants or a vehicle has been discovered, but we are continuing to broaden the search.
And it happened.
And one other thing, the noose.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Smollett was still wearing the alleged noose around his neck when police arrived at his friend's apartment nearly 45 minutes after the attack. Why?
On social media, you can track his actions or what he did. He was delayed in New York, taking a flight from here to Chicago. What was supposed to be a two-hour flight ended up being almost 5 hours, then said goodnight, everybody, and that was at 11 p.m. And then this attack happened at 2 a.m. When it's freezing out, I don't know if you guys know this, but gangbangers and bad guys don't really like the cold.
Well,
crime
is committed.
Zero.
But crime is committed in the cold. But
I just there would be somebody running away, or two guys walking together, or maybe one guy walking away from that area at that time of the alleged attack, and the police have nothing.
A source, this is CWB Chicago reporting. A source familiar with the investigation told CWB Chicago that the rope, was quote thin clothesline straight out of the package. The Sun-Times reported that the rope, quote, didn't necessarily resemble a noose, unquote, as has been widely reported. So everything that was widely, just about everything that was widely reported at the outset that could be incendiary and could politicize this has been rejected by subsequent reports and Chicago police. So just so we get our heads around ourselves a little bit before we help to foment the hysteria out there about some racist, homophobic, Trump-inspired attack. There's not a lot of evidence to support any of that at this juncture.
Right, but this is a huge black eye, again, for Chicago. And the creator of Empire, Lee Daniels, tweeted out again a picture of Smollett and then took it down within minutes, but did talk.
You didn't deserve, nor anybody deserves, to have a noose put around your neck, to have bleach thrown on you. We have to love each other, regardless of what sexual orientation we are.
That's right. They said
thank you.
Too,
of course. So what?
He was doused with, at first they said a liquid, and then they came forward and said it was bleach.
Yeah.
That they threw on him. But he doesn't have any bleach burns.
That man is doing nothing but minding his own business. And you feel it's necessary to go after him like that.
Nobody nobody defends the allegation. If the allegation were true, there's horrible. Nobody rallying to the defense of attacking anybody for any reason. This is such a stupid conversation and such awful reporting. Awful, awful reporting. From the sentimental sophistry of, like, there's anybody making the case that it's okay to attack this guy. Yeah. That's idiotic. To the unprofessionalism of not getting your facts right. How are you, as a media outlet, charged with recording the facts as we know them at the moment, completely at odds with the Chicago police story and the lack of evidence to support the claims being made to this point? It's remarkable.
But the fact that the attacker said that they made MAGA comments, I mean...
No, that Smollett said that in a subsequent interview, not his first conversation with police.
And he was really reluctant. He did not want to file a police report.
Right. I mean, look, Chicago's a violent place. There are ignorant people out there that attack people because they don't like their race or their orientation or their religion or whatever. But, I mean, as we say in so many of these cases, particularly with the politicized ideological bent of the Chicago Press Corps, which is just an outpost of the D.C. press corps, healthy skepticism always. Ask questions. It's real simple. According to who, what evidence do you have? Those two questions that my friends, the Edgar County Watchdogs, these sort of independent investigators, a couple of retired guys investigating corruption at every level of government in Illinois and doing a great job. That's their whole philosophy. Two simple questions when you hear from a public official or you hear from a reporter. Who says, what evidence do you have?
That's why when things like this happen, I wish I was still on the street reporting, because I used to ask those questions. Like, where's the evidence? Where's the surveillance camera? And those are questions that I was asking my source yesterday, but no reporters were asking that. They just went like, oh, this is so awful. It's a hate crime and blah, blah, blah. But it reminds me of the doctor that was visiting from Iowa, Dan, and he said he got stabbed while running along the Riverwalk there. And it was so shady and there was no surveillance video. You know why? Because he stabbed himself and he made up the story. And then he was charged with filing a false police report.
I'm not saying this is a hoax. I'm just trying to apply some healthy skepticism. And it's hard to get your mind around the idea that people would make up hate crimes. But how many times have we seen it on college campuses?
Oh.
with, you know, the racial epithet, the swastika, and it turns out to be somebody that wanted attention for themselves or somebody that was trying to do, you know, the double bank shot to advance their political agenda. I don't know. Jim in Crown Point, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, guys. You know, it's so cold out here. I saw a dog chasing a cat, and they were both walking.
Oh, okay.
All right, so what do you think of this?
You know, this rings much like back in the day when a husband would kill his wife and say, oh, a big black man came in and killed her. Well, the minute you make a suspect, now you have to prove your point. So this is the same thing. This guy now, they have to prove all this stuff that they are saying. Our news media is very selective. I was walking down the street in the summertime one time with a black friend of mine. We're walking, and there's a group of about 10 black males on the same side of the street. And my buddy said, who is black? Said, let's get over on the other side of the street. You know, he was thinking the same thing I was thinking, only he was able to verbalize it.
Yeah, the Jesse Jackson moment. Thanks for the call, Jim.
You know, I got a text message from someone in the media saying if we went on and said, that this was a possible hoax, what would happen to that reporter?
Well, you don't have to.
I mean,
to,
they did say alleged attack.
You don't have
there
to.
There was a police report filed.
You don't have to allege it's a possible hoax. You just have to ask the questions.
Yeah.
And say, and also, if you're a good reporter to distinguish yourself from most of your colleagues, you point out the misreporting that was done. Initially, reports said this. It turns out police are saying
now that it's
that.
This.
Yeah. Right. So on all of these important elements of the allegation that made this a national story, that made this a political story. So you don't have to allege anything. Don't be in the business of alleging. Be in the business of fact reporting and asking the pertinent questions. Paul in New Lenox.
Hi, guys. I was just two questions. The first one is, or statements, did anybody check the ratings of Empire? Because this could be a whole, you know, let's get the ratings up a little bit by using this kind of propaganda. And the second thing I want to comment about is I just passed Dennis Quaid on the side of the road. I don't know how cold it is out there, but is that any indication?
That Dennis Quaid is on the side of the road? Thanks for the couple. I'm not getting it. I don't get the Dennis Quaid.
I don't either.
Did I miss some important Dennis Quaid post-apocalyptic? Oh wait, well, he was in the silly climate change movie in New York where New York like flooded and froze over.
Day after tomorrow.
All right, that was a deep dig, Paul in New Lenox, but I figured it out. All right, we'll give you credit for that one. It's pretty good. Terrible movie, but good reference. Edward in Midway.
Yeah. Good morning, Dan and Amy. I speculate, and this was a conversation at the office yesterday, quick to blame Trump fans. And I suspect that between now and the election, there's going to be organized fake attacks, you know, kind of so they can get in the media and, oh, look at these Trump fans, these racist people.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Edward. I mean, right. A smirk is a hate crime if it's somebody who's a Trump supporter. So
outlandish. I mean, I just.
Well, and here.
I mean, that they pour bleach on them, shout, you know, homophobic slurs, talk about MAGA, you're a MAGA country. It's too outlandish. It's just not believable.
It's possible. It's possible. I don't know. But I do know this. I say it routinely. What a society extols, it begets. And what do we extol in America today? Being a victim.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Early voting has started in the Chicago mayor's race. Have you heard?
How many people are going to be out voting today, Dan?
Yeah, today's a great day to get out and vote. You've got all day. Most of you are off. Kids are home from school. Take your kids and have a civic experience with your kids, Amy. Take them to go vote for, you know, your socialist of choice.
Yeah, right, right. You mean for Paul Vallis, who's not a socialist? Yes, yes.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line, taking stock of the race with early voting starting. Less than a month away is the primary election to winnow the field to two. Where do you stand, if anywhere? Take your calls on that.
And also how you're surviving the cold.
Completely unrelated topic.
I mean, are the polling booths even open? I mean, are the polling places even open today?
The polling places are inside.
No, I know, because they...
Our government office is open.
We're not getting mail. I don't know.
Yeah.
In one Missouri town, they've asked criminals. It's so cold that they've asked criminals not to commit crimes today. Warrensburg, Missouri. Bone-chilling temperatures, so they said, we're asking a favor for at least 3 days. Can you keep the criminaling to a minimum? I don't even know that that's a word. It's really cold out, so do yourself and us a favor, and please stay inside.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good stuff. It's a great public service announcement. It's right up there with Tiny Dancers. Put, gloves and boots on. Now, getting back to
right,
the actual future of the city, since this is sort of a one-day occurrence. Bill Daley, he's one of the front-runners, I guess, now. If I was handicapping the race right now,
really?
I'd say it's Daley, Preckwinkle, Mendoza, Chico, and then...
Then Vallis?
Then, like, Vallis, McCarthy, Willie Wilson. And the interesting thing about that is there's still a real potential for a surprise, because I've just named seven candidates that are basically within the margin of error of one another. You're basically talking about, like, from 8 to 15% of the vote right now. So... barring something wildly unforeseen, you're going to have a runoff election. This looks like it's going to be tight to the very end. The only caution I would offer is money can separate. And it seems to me that Daley and Preckwinkle, Daley through the C-suite rent seekers, and Preckwinkle through the public sector unions, most particularly SEIU, will have the money to barrage the airwaves as people start to tune in the closing days and weeks of the campaign. Whereas I'm not so sure that's the case. Chico a little bit, maybe Mendoza a little bit, although I think it's drying up for her. And the others, it's really sort of hand to mouth to get anything going in terms of retail marketing other than social media, maybe some radio. But in terms of pounding the television airwaves, network affiliate television, it looks like it's mainly Daley and Preckwinkle with a little bit of Chico and a little bit of Mendoza. And isn't it interesting that those are the Burke four? And it isn't interesting that those are sort of the four candidates in the top tier right now.
And Daley's campaign ads are such bull jive. Day one, I'm going to have a plan to stop guns and stop gangs. I'm going to get it done. And shows a picture with Barack Obama, you know, to try and get the African-American vote. It's just so tiresome. Because he's just an extension of Rahm Emanuel. He's a third term of Rahm Emanuel, is what he is.
Bill Daley talking with Mike Flannery over the weekend on his Fox News Chicago Sunday program offered this. He's an agent of system change.
Oh, okay.
You can't, nor I or anyone else, make somebody honest. But you can change a system that has existed for almost 100 years that maybe leads the climate. We should have term limits. We should have no outside income. We should have the aldermen not mini mayors of their wards. We should make them more like legislators.
Don't you need the aldermen, though, to agree to take their own power away?
Last 100 years, 40 of which were governed by your father and your brother.
Yeah, you're right. Uh-huh.
It's just a point of order.
Right.
He was asked about that, though, about the Daley family legacy, and here's what he had to say.
Look, I don't think any of us think about a legacy. We think of the job we try to do, the life we try to live as an individual, and not try to figure out some grand legacy. It's not about that. It's about trying to get up every day like every other family does in Chicago and do right by people and do your job, whatever it may be, in a right way.
Okay, so
not worry about a legacy.
Yeah, he's not worried about legacy. He's not doing this for legacy. He's not worried about legacy. He's doing this because at 70 years old, he has been reborn as an agent of system change. Okay. I don't know.
System change.
Although not
keep the same staff, Emmanuel's staff, well, HR director, everybody's the same. They've been promised that, you know, we're going to support Daily and then you guys can all keep your jobs.
Well, there has been some tension between Tiny Dancer and the Dailies over the years because Tiny Dancer, he didn't go so far as to blame Daily for all of the problems that he left unsolved or even unaddressed, much less solved. But there was some, you know, look what I inherited type of stuff that I think the Dailies bristled at. But the bottom line is Bill Daly is saying he's an agent of change. And
that's
then on some of the big issues, as you just alluded to, like violence.
Has he got a plan? Is he going to get it done?
Tell me if this sounds at all familiar to you.
Right now, it's a misdemeanor in Illinois to be in possession of a gun.
Oh,
what's the message there? It's not that big of a deal. Okay?
New York's a lot tougher.
Talk to Kim
okay?
Fox.
And they have a lot lower shooting, fewer shootings and a lot less murders. We have to get background checks. Springfield can pass that. We can should pass an assault ban weapon in Springfield. We can do that. Tougher gun laws. 1 out of 10 guns used in Chicago comes from one gun shop in Chicago Ridge in our suburbs. Okay? So maybe we could look at them, look at what's going on. It's hard to look at Indiana because Indiana has very lax gun laws, and that's a national issue. But I think we ought to take a serious look at how to use technologies better. If it's up to me, if I was able to, I'd have a camera on every block in city of Chicago, no matter what the crime level is, in order to give people comfort.
Oh, please.
Well, a camera on every block in the city of Chicago could help us know if Jussie Smollett actually got attacked. But here's the thing.
Too soon.
About that.
You went there.
Oh, two things. The gun thing, I'll get to a second. What about the camera on every block? Do you want this to be web, a Big Brother web?
Europe? No. London? No.
You know, CCTV everywhere? Every move?
No, I like having some freedoms.
On the issue of guns? Department of Justice issued a report recently that's worth noting. This is nationally, of course, but to suggest that Chicago is much different than the national norms, I would suspect it's not. One standard deviation maybe. Among prisoners serving time for a crime during which they possessed a gun, about half got their weapons either the black market, underground market, 43%, or through theft, 6%. 10% bought their guns from a retail source. 0.8%, all of the talk and obsession about gun shows, the gun show loophole, which doesn't exist. 0.8% of prisoners serving time for a crime in which they possessed a gun bought their guns at gun shows. 0.8%. Another 11% of the time, someone else bought the gun for them, either as a gift or straw purchase. 15% got their guns from family and friends, buying, renting, trading, borrowing. And 12% of the time, the guns were either brought to the crime by someone else or found at the scene. So it's just worth, you know, putting some data into the warmed over anti-gun rhetoric of a Bill Daly at the local level or a Kamala Harris at the national level. We'll get to her in the progressive candidates for president later.
Free health care for everybody.
Mike in the North Side.
Good morning. Sometimes these conversations just write themselves. Did Bill Daly actually say, you get up in the morning and you try to do good?
Yeah.
What was he trying to do when his son, working for Goldman Sachs, made money off the parking meters? When his nephew Patrick made money off the Wi-Fi at the airport?
Trying to do good for his nephew.
Yeah. And what about when one of his nephews embezzled $65 billion from the pension funds? What was he doing that day? And when the other Veneco killed a kid, and everybody in the family knew it, they covered it up for 10 years, what was he doing that day? The whole reason why that thing with the guy downtown got blown out of proportion was because that SEIU's candidate, Tony Preckwinkle, got knocked down, and she was behind Daly in the polls now. Let me tell you who did that crime. Let's see, they were wearing MAGA hats, they were listening to WIND, Joe Walsh, they just came and got their testosterone checked, they were probably both white, both cops, They both had a, you know, code of silence. They were going home to lie down under my pillows. And they one was carrying a Confederate flag, and the other had a Lock Her Up t-shirt on. What a boogeyman to come up with right before the election.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Yes. The other interesting dynamic this week, the attack on Susana Mendoza.
Yeah.
Tony Preckwinkle threw...
Were the ladies fighting again?
Tony Preckwinkle threw her allies, taking Susana Mendoza to task for her support for the death penalty. It was interesting. You had Karen Yarborough and other Preckwinkle supporters re-litigating statements Susana Mendoza made as a state legislator about the death penalty as well as about gangbangers. Listen, and oh, by the way, they also brought to the press conference Edgar Fields, who was a death row inmate who was exonerated before the moratorium was imposed and ultimately the death penalty in Illinois was repealed. But Susana Mendoza as a state legislator on the death penalty.
Many of you may recall that I was one of the last members in this chamber to pass an expansion of the death penalty. In fact, there was no issue that I was more passionate about than that one issue. Throughout my entire life, I've been a staunch supporter of the death penalty and a firm believer in the justice it serves and the punishment it represents for the worst of the worst in our society. I still believe that to be true. I want to leave no doubt that I feel no compassion or see any value whatsoever in the lives of the truly guilty on death row. I could administer the death penalty myself to a cop killer or a serial murderer and sleep like a baby at night if I knew without a doubt of their guilt. As a matter of fact, I believe that our current manner of executing the guilty in Illinois is much too compassionate and shows respect for life where the killer had none.
Oh, I kinda like her.
I believe that a sanitized death is too kind and that the guilty should die in a manner much harsher, truer to the crimes that they committed. I know that this may sound cruel to some of you, but it pales in comparison to the cruelty inflicted upon so many innocent victims by these murderous animals. But this debate for me is no longer about whether or not guilty killers deserve to die for their crimes. They do deserve to die. They do.
Oh, what, I love her.
What about Hang 'em High Mendoza? Not only is she a enthusiastic supporter of the death penalty.
She wants it to be very painful.
She wants it to be medieval. It sounds like she wants it to be eye for an eye, Old Testament style, like.
Kill the way that you killed.
Sort of. That's what it sounded like, yeah.
Let's rip their fingernails off one at a time, huh? Maybe a toenail, too?
Sure.
I love the death penalty.
You're all for torture.
I'm not torture, but I am.
You just said rip the fingernails off.
I did.
That's torture.
Oh, is that torture? Oh, I didn't know.
I mean, I mean, in some eyes.
That makes me respect her a little bit more, that she feels the same way that I do about the death penalty.
Well,
I've seen way too many homicide victims. So that's why I've formed my opinion because of that.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that she's getting attacked for that. Uh-huh. It tells you something about the Chicago electorate, where they are on the death penalty, where they are on that kind of rhetoric.
Is Mayor of Chicago there? Are they going to have any say in the death penalty, though?
Does the Mayor of Chicago have influence on public policy? Yes.
Okay.
Edgar Fields was on site of this press conference I mentioned with Preckwinkle supporters. To respond to what Mendoza had to say. And oh, by the way, it's worth noting, Mendoza didn't walk back her support of the death penalty, but she did try to recast it because that kind of rhetoric and that position doesn't play well.
In Chicago?
In Chicago, and particularly in minority communities, some of which she needs a significant percentage, particularly the Latino community. So it's interesting to note Mendoza wasn't doubling down. She was sort of trying to recast it and take the edges off her rather sharp rhetoric on the House floor, but here's Edgar Fields on Mendoza.
Myself, I'm 65 years old now. Pretty much a grandfather. But I used to be in the game a long time ago. And I saw that prejudice and what can happen. Even if you're innocent, and I was, and it led to me be charged with this crime. It led to everything that happened to me. And to hear Ms. Mendoza used those comments as if a gang member is fair game, they're a coyote. Hey, the human factor should never be left out in these type of decisions, because at the time that Ms. Mendoza made these comments, 2010, it was 20 death row exonerees already, where it was proven that these men were sent to death row for something they didn't do. But yet, the anger was still there. It was still there despite it was clear facts that Illinois' death penalty system was broken. I'm living proof of it, along with 21 other men.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I find Edgar Fields more persuasive than Susana Mendoza, and I, as did you, lived through how wildly error-ridden was the justice system in this state, that you were for a time running at about a 50-50 clip in terms of men on death row who were innocent, versus men who were guilty. And I'll tell you what, before you cheerlead Susana Mendoza for the death penalty, think about who, particularly in this city and this state, are in charge or would be in charge of administering it. Remember what I say, when we talk about federal prosecutors, it's easy to talk about Bob Mueller and say, not beyond reproach, should be looked at with a jaundiced eye. What about the local level, too, and the state level? You want the power of life and death in the hands of the political ruling class in Chicago and Illinois? I don't. One of the reasons, just one, but it's an important reason why I'm actually an opponent of the death penalty. So I don't share Susana Mendoza's enthusiasm, and I find her, you know, hang 'em high rhetoric a little bit of a put on. Her little squeaky voice, she's trying to sound like, you know, she's a tough cookie.
Yeah.
Exactly.
She's playing with the big boys now.
Yeah, I'm not buying it, but I am buying the reality on the ground that Edgar Fields described from not that long ago. Tom in Deer Park.
Hey, hi, good morning. My call was in relationship to the clip you played on Bill Daley. You know, he's got the exact same babbling cadence that his brother has.
Yeah.
And he's just as dangerous. His comment about having a camera on every corner, that he's not kidding around when he thinks that. And currently down in Springfield, there's two bills out there. One is to ban magazines over 10 rounds. And another is to look at people's social media before you get a FOID card.
Yeah.
So this crew, these leftists, these totalitarians, they're not kidding around. They are seriously after our civil liberties.
Thanks for the call, Tom. If, good points, both. And the other thing about the cameras, though, that's nice for Bill Daley, a la the parking meters, he can have the city taxpayers pay for him, and then he can sell them, do another deal that benefits one of his relatives for 20 cents on the dollar, like he did the parking meters. It's really sets up nicely to continue the Daley tradition.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
It's time for Dan Prof's Parenting Tips. Whoa! Dan Prof's Parenting Tips. Whoa! Tell your kids to shut up and listen to him.
You're a child. Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. You still think your kids make you happier, and if you think that, you're wrong. Research shows that parenthood leads to a happiness gap. Maybe that's because the pleasures of parenthood are outweighed by all the extra responsibilities, housework, and, of course, the costs.
Yeah, these kids are expensive, I always say.
The average middle-income married couple spent between $12,350 and $13,900 on each of their children in 2015, according to a report from the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
I think it's much more than that, but all right.
And if you're asking why is the U.S. Department of Agriculture recording how much kids parents are spending on their kids, that's a very good question.
Yeah, why are they?
Because those non-essential employees have to do something. Extrapolate for that number, you're looking at spending about $233,000 per child from birth through age 17. If you're wealthy, like Amy, you can expect to spend significantly more, around $372,000 for each child from birth through age 17.
Well, yeah, I mean, groceries alone, and Mike Scott, I want to know, because he's got a family of four. Groceries alone, I spend more than $300 a week on groceries. I've got two growing boys, and they eat me out of house and home. How much do you spend a week?
I think we budget $250 a week, but remember, one of the three is out the door, pretty much, Jeremy.
Okay.
So even for
where
three,
do you shop?
We shop at Aldi. 100% shop at Aldi.
So you have, you have four kids. So you,
right.
let's round number that. Let's just say that's $1 million. Do you think every day about what you could have done with that $1 million?
Do you understand how much milk we go through?
Oh, gallons.
On a weekly basis.
Do you? I'm sure you have what, 4 gallons, right?
Oh my goodness! We should own our own farm.
If you'd had your own cow, milked your own cow, you would have saved money.
Yes, we wonder every day how warm our tropical island would be.
Exactly.
Yep.
Amy, it's unbelievable.
I
don't buy anything for myself anymore. I'll never forget on Mother's Day last year, Eli came up to me and goes, "Mom, you don't have any new clothes. You don't even have any new activewear. Why don't you go buy yourself something?" I'm like, "Well, I can't because I buy clothes for you guys because they're growing. Eli's taller than me now. Peyton's 6'5".
Do you think about what would be in your closet if you had that extra 500 grand that Eli and Peyton are eating up?
I'd have a nice car.
Yeah. One that didn't need vegetable oil to open the door. That would turn over in the cold.
This is what it sounded like this morning. Ready? It wouldn't catch.
Yeah.
Guess how much an Uber costs to come out here? I would have had to wait 22 minutes.
It would have to surge pricing too, right? So maybe $70.
No, about $80.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Got another car to work.
You're taking food out of the mouths of your children by doing that.
That's why it's a guilt
trip. Now, not to sidetrack things, but what is your Uber rating now? I know a week ago you were going to talk about that.
Yeah. All right, so I know why my Uber rating was down. Real quick.
Because you're mean.
You're a bad tipper.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
You're mean to Uber drivers. That's why.
I'm not mean at all. I'm very nice now.
That's not what I hear from one of those Ponce brothers that's driving.
Stop. I did see him in his car the other day, too, by the way. All right, let's see my Uber rating. My Uber rating was bad because my children, I've been Ubering my kids around. And apparently Eli was, the frost or the condensation that forms on a window, he was making marks, and the Uber driver didn't like that, so that affects my rating.
So there you go. Think about how happy you would be.
4.25, by the way.
You'd have $500,000 more,
right?
And you'd have a higher Uber rating if it wasn't for Peyton and Eli.
What's your Uber rating now?
4.86.
Yeah, you're such a show off. I'm getting better. 4.25 is not bad.
Now, is this true, or is this just sort of the anti-family nature of the DC Press Corps reporting this financial data? That the kids making you happier, is that an urban legend? Is that a myth? Does your experience comport with the research that show a happiness gap because of all the things you could be doing with the money you would have had? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. And don't give me the answer you think you should give. I want an honest assessment of trading your kids in for cash.
What a bunch of bull hockey. That's my editorial comment for the day. Thank you.
All my friends that don't have kids have nice things such as nice cars, but they also have second homes.
Yeah, and they're
whether
grumpy,
whether they be in Michigan
too.
Or they're in Florida.
I know, but they're grumpy.
No, they're not.
They are.
They're
they
happy.
Really are.
Yeah.
No, I don't think they're grumpy. I think that they're very happy.
I'm happy with my imaginary kids.
Your fake kids. How old are they now?
They're 10 and 12, just had birthdays.
Right. 10 and 12. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
January birthdays.
Uh-huh. Yeah. No, I mean, I love my children, but I'm looking at a 5-day weekend with them right now because school canceled today, school canceled tomorrow. We were not having school Friday anyway. So it would have been nice.
All right.
If I had money, we could go away.
But here's the other thing. Now, if you're going to go ahead and have the kids and derive some enjoyment from them, get a return on the investment you're making.
My kids are boys. They're not going to help me when I'm
talking old. About. You're talking about.
They're not going to come visit me at the
you're
home.
Talking, for you, you're talking about like $750,000.
Oh,
you know.
I know.
Here's something you can do.
What?
Pull them away from screens. New study from psychologists, doctors in Canada found increased screen time in young children can cause issues with reaching developmental milestones. Looked at 2,400-plus mothers and children with higher levels of screen time for children age 2 to 2.5. And then the developmental milestone test results in the same children that were 3 to 5 years old. The study found on average the two-year-old watching 17 hours of television per week, three-year-olds watching 25,
what did they discover?
For each age group, they found children with increased screen time showed poor performances on developmental testing when they reached the next age group. Right. Developmental evaluations, communication, motor, and fine motor skills, problem solving, personal social skills.
Well, yeah. Do you know how many? Because when my kids were younger, we didn't have the iPad and we didn't have iPhones where you could just put on a, you know, like a cartoon and have the kids watch it. Kids are constantly, always, all I see, this is the ultimate babysitter now, iPhones and iPads for moms. If they're in the grocery store, the kid's watching a movie. If they're walking down the street, the kid's watching a movie. If you're at a restaurant, they're watching a cartoon. It's ridiculous. Shame on those new moms.
Yeah.
Don't be lazy. You know, let them be bored. It's okay to be bored.
Right. And the result is that the developmental lapse,
yeah,
but also the developmental lag, but also just less resilient. You haven't interacted with people. You haven't confronted problems. You haven't had to hash things out. You haven't been challenged except to, you know, get the high score on Tour of Duty or Call of Duty Fortnite or whatever it is.
Oh, Fortnite. Battle Royale. Do you know how much Fortnite is going to be played in the next 5 days here?
How much?
So much that the city is going to get a lot on the amusement tax.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, because now they tax what I do in my own home. That's amusement tax. 9%, I got my bill.
Well, there's
out of my mind. I'm so upset.
There's the upside of kids. They serve as revenue generators for the state.
Yeah, there you go.
That's good. Rob and Huntley, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer. Hey, Rob.
Rob.
Hi.
Hey, how
Hello?
Are you?
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
How you doing?
Hello?
Yeah, Rob, you're on. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, the Illinois law, if you're a divorced parent, will make you or force you to pay for your kids' college. So even after they turn 18 and become an adult, up to the age of 23, you can be forced to pay for their college. And not just a community college. They'll use the University of Illinois as the basis of what you're going to pay.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, thanks for the call, Rob. Good point. And public universities charge an average of $20,000 for tuition in-state, $34,000 if you're not, and then, of course, private schools are a multiple of that. So then that's another, you know, that'd be another, you know, $200,000 to $300,000 for you, Amy.
What could I do with that money? We could go car shopping.
Yeah. I mean, think about that. You could be tooling around in a Maserati, and all you have to do is sacrifice Peyton or Eli's college education. Think about it.
Okay.
La 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 ka-ching.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Super Bowl Sunday, and Tom Brady has a message for all the haters, including 10-year-old Ace Davis, who scientifically proved that he's a cheater.
Who we had on the show earlier.
That's right. Brady talking to another young man.
Oh, that's right. Who's that little kid? I saw him.
An aspiring sports reporter.
Despite the negative fan base, a.k.a. the haters. I don't know. What do we do about the haters? We love them. We love them. We love them back because we don't hate back.
There it is. Message of love from Tom Brady. Does that make you like him more?
No.
No. But I hate the Rams because of what they did to the Saints. So I'm cheering for the Patriots for the first time in my life.
Okay. All right. There it is. Bears superfan Don Behrman Wachter.
Oh, yeah. Didn't he get – is he in the Hall of Fame or something? What happened?
He's a finalist.
For what?
Related football note. Finalist for the Ford Hall of Fans, which is a special section in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in where, Amy?
Canton, Ohio.
There it is.
I've been there.
Very nice.
It's really cool.
He is competing against two other finalists. Steelers fan Rick Holman, who I'm pulling for.
Oh, what about the whistle guy from New Orleans?
Dolphins fan Roger Avila. Those are the three finalists.
Wait, why wouldn't they put that St. Louis or a Saint New Orleans Saints fan?
To take it up with the committee. Take it up with the fans.
Because that
it's
guy
a fan
was
vote.
Cool.
Wachter, who has worked as an urban forester in LaGrange, last worked as an urban forester in LaGrange, has been a season ticket holder for 33 years. Navy and orange face paint, real bear's head.
Oh, I know who that guy is.
Number 46, Doug Plank jersey, yep. Fake fur on his arms and legs. Carried the Bears flag at as Bear Man at Soldier Field from 98 to 01 and during the team's one season in Champaign. And
yeah,
so,
good for
you know,
him. I hope he wins.
Good luck to Don Behrman Wachter. You know, making Chicago proud. I mean, wash the stink of Cody Parkey off of this season.
We're not going to see Cody Parkey next season.
The Bears.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, Polar Vortex 2019, and this is a serious note. We got an email from one guy, no power since 4 a.m., no information, city, non-emergency, not helpful, actually ignorant when called, ComEd seems to always fail. This wasn't a surprise, but I don't know where that person is, but my sister texted me.
Uh-oh, what?
She's in Warrenville. She said that her neighborhood has no power.
That's dangerous.
So she's...
where are they going
to
head?
She's going to my dad's place in Wheaton. Oh, yeah. So so that's one report in Warrenville. I just emailed this guy who emailed us about no power since 4 a.m. Maybe he's Warrenville area too, but if not, we'll report on where that is.
How long has your sister's power been out?
I don't know. She just texted me.
Oh, my God. That's scary too, because then you don't have heat in your house, and then obviously your pipes can burst, and that's a whole other big problem.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
All right. So we'll... and I'm sure Mike Scott will as well keep you updated on the impacts of the Arctic, actually worse than Arctic, Siberian, worse than Siberian,
no,
Mount Everestian,
it's
worse than Mount Everest.
It's so cold here.
How cold is it?
That it's warmer in the South Pole. It's warmer in Antarctica.
Yeah.
It's bad. We haven't seen these temperatures since, what, the 80s.
The flip side is, though, great day for a Segway tour around the lake. No waiting. So
well, nothing's open, too. Navy Pier is closed. The museums are all closed. No mail today.
We're open, and we're talking about the sailing issues of the day. We've got a State of the Union address coming next week. And do we have a deal on border security funding coming to Trump's desk before that address? There is movement, underreported story, of course, because the D.C. press corps is hoping Republicans break and break bad on Trump. But three dozen Democrat legislators went to Nancy Pelosi wanting to do a deal on border funding along the lines of what the president proposed the weekend before last. You've had Republicans, one report out yesterday, Republicans giving Trump the green light for a border wall emergency declaration if there is no deal struck between these this bipartisan congressional contingent negotiating a deal. Also, to buttress the president's claim of the humanitarian crisis on the border, as well as the security crisis, Pentagon is readying to provide more troops to seal the Mexican border, particularly if Trump does invoke his emergency power, according to Acting Secretary of Defense Patrick Shanahan, who made that pronouncement yesterday. And remember, as we talked about, you've had the president identify a couple of weeks ago, and it now confirmed by multiple media outlets over the last few days that you have yet another migrant caravan trying to make its way up through Mexico to the United States, perhaps numbering as great as 12,000. So against all that, the Democrats have selected their respondent to the State of the Union address. Always a tough role for anybody to do successfully, much less memorably. Stacey Abrams, the failed Democrat nominee for governor of Georgia in 2018. Stacey Abrams. Now, Cardi B apparently was unavailable. That was both my choice and Stephen Colbert's. And you'll remember she submitted an audition tape, which I found very compelling, just to refresh your recollection.
Hey, y'all, I just want to remind y'all, because it's been a little bit over 3 weeks, okay? It's been a little bit over 3 weeks. Trump is now ordering, as in summoning, federal government workers to go back to work without getting paid. Now, I don't want to hear y'all motherfuckers talking about, oh, but Obama shut down the government for 17 days. Yeah, for health care, so your grandma could check her blood pressure, and you could go check your gynecologist with no motherfuckers problem. Now, I know a lot of y'all don't care because y'all don't work for the government or y'all probably don't even have a job, but this is really serious, bro. This is crazy. Like, our country is in a hellhole right now, all for a fucking wall. And we really need to take this serious. I feel like we need to take some action. I don't know what type of action, because this is not what I do, but I'm scared. This is crazy. And I really feel bad for these people that got to go to work to not get motherfucking paid.
See, if Cardi B would have given the response, it would have been memorable.
It was a response, all right.
Maybe she can write Stacey Abrams' response or collaborate. For more on State of the Union, the state of a border security funding deal, and the state of Cardi B's command of the English language, we're pleased to be joined by Diamond and Silk, the First Ladies of Punditry, host of The Viewer's View and stars of the new documentary, Dummycrats. Ladies, Diamond and Silk, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you
thank
for,
you
having,
for
us.
Having us.
Don't forget the host of Fox Nation.
Oh, excuse me.
Fox Nation, FoxNation.com.
That's right.
All right. Very good. FoxNation.com. That's where they're moving a lot of their television hosts into that Fox Asian space, too. So that's great that Diamond and Silk are there. Diamond and Silk, your reaction to the selection of Stacey Abrams to respond to Trump's State of the Union address next week. How do you receive that?
Well, you know, first of all, I don't care if they get Stacey Abrams or the Pope.
Yeah.
Nothing is going to be able to help the Democrats, because the American people will be able to see right through them and how they didn't come to the table three times to make sure that furlough workers got paid.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're not telling you. Listen, and when it comes to this president, President Donald J. Trump, he wants a border wall. He wants our country secure.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave them the opportunity by opening back up the government for them to come to the table to will and deal. And
that's
if
right.
they don't do that, they're going to be the ones looking crazy.
That's
so
right.
I don't care about Stacey Abrams or whoever. Mm-hmm. They can get whoever they want to. They can go to the bottom of the barrel or the top of the ladder. Don't make me no difference. The deal is we need border security.
That's right.
Yeah, but a lot of people feel that Pelosi and Schumer, the Democratic Party in general, won because President Trump caved.
No, he didn't cave. Well, see, what you all don't understand is President Trump is a negotiator.
Right.
So he didn't cave. They gonna cave. All he did was pave the way for the Democrat rats to fall right into the trap.
That's right.
He tried to get them to negotiate three times to make sure the government workers got paid.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't even come to the table for that.
Right.
So he had to open up the government to make sure they got paid. That makes sure that they come to the table. But if you don't, the American people gonna see who's playing politics,
right.
who's playing with the American people's lives when it comes to our national security and when it comes to border security.
What the president did is reposition himself. While the Democrats is playing checkers, President Trump is playing chess.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, see if I'm thinking properly. My suggestion for the State of the Union address, at least in the part that he's going to tackle border security and the immigration issue, was if there is no deal before then, and there might be, but if there isn't, would be to restate the compromise he proposed the weekend before last, because it's just so eminently reasonable. It contains so many things Democrats have previously supported and said they want. It is an overture from Republicans on to DACA families and so many Americans who support some sort of permanent resolution for those kids who were brought here by their parents. And I just think it's persuasive to most reasonable people who don't have an ideological bent or aren't consumed with Trump hate. So why not restate that if that's your best foot forward? And I wonder if you think that, and if you think not only in the State of the Union address should he restate the compromise he proposed, but on the
he can restate all day. It's up to them to listen to what he's proposing and then move accordingly. And if they don't do that, what is the president supposed to do? Here's the deal. The president is asking for $5 point something billion. Now, just this month alone, we've spent $18 billion on illegal aliens.
Right.
$18 billion. Give him the $5 point something billion that he wants so that he can build this wall and give Border Patrol agents the resources that they need to do their job.
That's
you
right.
want these agents to do their job and take these people in, and these people are coming in with various disease and issues and conditions, but you won't give them the resources they need to do it. That's just like telling me, go paint the house, but you got my hands tied behind my back. Now, how I'm going to paint it with my mouth? So I'm just like, we could need to look at the bigger picture here. We're spending out all of these billions taking in illegal aliens, housing them in sanctuary cities. But all he's asking for is $5 billion. Give him the $5 billion and solve that. We won't have to spend $18 billion a month or more.
But okay, I get where you want to go. But my point is the president has this bully pulpit and he has these opportunities. He has an opportunity actually before the Super Bowl. He's agreed to do the traditional pre-Super Bowl interview with CBS. So he's got that national opportunity and he's got the State of the Union address. And so this is an opportunity for him to be persuasive. So what's the most persuasive case for him to make in advance of the position he's trying to achieve?
The most tell the people the truth. Let them know what's going on at the border. Let them know how drugs are poured into the border. Let them know what he's planning to do. Just like when he opened up the government, he laid out what he wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So let them know that. I agree with that. But what I want the Democrats and all Americans to understand and see, we're spending out too much money here. Mm-hmm. And this problem can be solved. Yep. And when you have the top two leaders who are Democrats that don't want to solve this, then how much of a kickback paddywhack, give a dog a ball, are you getting? How are you profiting from this border being open? And that's what we need to look at. It's about solving problems instead of playing games. And Chuck and Nancy is playing games.
That's right.
So the State of the Union, much anticipated, is going to be next Tuesday. What do you want to hear from President Trump?
What we always
and will you
hear,
ladies be
we
there?
Need to secure the border and tell the truth and then show the American people how the Democrats are not working for them. You know, a lot of these Democrats were so-called, quote-unquote, elected to do a job for the American people, but they're so bent out of shape on working for illegal aliens. That's a problem for Americans. Mm-hmm. Most Americans want a wall. Most Americans want to be secured in their country. And so we need to go ahead, put forth the $5 billion mm-hmm. to build it and keep it moving.
And then he also need to go ahead on and lay out and show us how everything that he's already implemented have benefited Americans for the betterment of all Americans. Let us see how the tax cuts have worked. Let us see how different things that he's implemented have worked in this country and benefited us. Look at what he's done in the last 2 years. He's done more in 2 years than Obama did in 8 years. Let us see all of that. Let us know all of that. And then we can watch Nancy's face. Last year it looked like a prune. This year it looked like a raisin.
That's right.
You know what would be funny, too, just along the lines of what you're suggesting, Diamond and Silk, with Howard Schultz's announcement that he's contemplating an independent run for president and so many people being critical of the president's tax cuts and other successes like you're describing. Starbucks said in January 2018 statement, this is Starbucks reacting to the tax cuts. These offerings, the tax cuts, will total more than $250 million from more than 150,000 partners and are accelerated by recent changes in the U.S. tax law. The Starbucks basically how the Starbucks benefited and agreed that it benefited greatly. And so did its partners, 150,000 partners, meaning locations. Benefited from the Trump tax cuts. That'd be a nice little hoist by your own petard to send that back in Howard Schultz's direction during the State of the Union address, wouldn't it?
Well, absolutely. And mm-hmm. not only did Starbucks benefit, but Americans, average Americans mm-hmm. also benefited from the tax cut, too.
That's
so
right.
That needs to also be put out there as well. I get tired of hearing people talk about they want to tax the rich. The rich is the one that employ people. If you have millions of dollars, you have employees. So instead of taxing the rich half to death, how about we take that money and pass that down to the employees
mm-hmm.
instead of the government thinking that they can take it with this here socialistic ideas from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and
right.
that old Elizabeth Warren.
That's right. And if we stop funding sanctuary cities with taxpayers' dollars, if we stop funding illegal aliens with taxpayers' dollars, that money can come back to America, into America's pockets, and we don't have to be talking about taxing the rich just to do these social programs just to fund those. It's time for that money to come back to America. We can pay down our deficit, and we don't have to worry about doing all of these taxing on everybody.
And when you talk about taxing the rich, it reminds me of sharecropping.
Yeah.
You work all week, and then the man come to you and say, oh, well, you know you got to pay for this. You know you got to pay for that. And they only leave you with a few coins after you done pulled yourself up by your bootstraps and you done attained the American dream. If you going to take my money after I've obtained the American dream, then I'm not going to have any kind of push or pull to want to obtain it.
That's right.
All right.
Things make me mad. And listen, it's just common sense. Yeah. I love this president because he's using common sense. American people is thinking about it a different way, and you got these elites, they don't like it. And that's why they're doing everything they can
to
destroy this president, because he's using common sense to solve problems. He's about solving problems. He's not no all-talk, no-action president. You have Democrats, they don't take action, and they go missing in action, and we're tired of it.
Hey, Diamond and Silk, I think, you know, Arsenio all had things that make you go, I think you should do a segment on your Fox Nation, things that make you go, duh. How about that?
What do you think? I love it.
Yeah.
Diamond and Silk, Trump supporters, host of The Viewer's View, stars the new documentary Dummycrats, and of course you can catch them on Fox Nation as well. Diamond and Silk, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Always stay warm.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
You too.
Well, they're in the Carolina. They're fine.
Yeah, no, this cold snap is stretching far down past Illinois. The ladies joined us, by the way, on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Great day to go on our trip. You know, it's right around the corner, and we need you to sign up. Come with us to Nueva Vallarta, Mexico. That's where we'll be heading with Apple Vacations, and you're invited to come along with us April 6th through April 13th. We'll be seeing at the beautiful Maraval Residences Luxury Resort in Nuevo Vallarta, Mexico.
Jonathan and Jennifer from Now Wichita are joining us.
Yay!
They're fun.
I know Bob Gottfried's going to be joining us as well, because there's nine golf courses nearby. And you can snorkel, play tennis, head to the spa. And the place, you have to go look online, Maraval Residences Luxury Resort. Every room, the smallest room is 1,400 square feet. That's about the size of my house. So they're lovely suites, all-inclusive, 24-hour room
service. Servants' quarters, you mean.
Oh, yeah, right, sure. It's in between the rainforest and the Pacific Ocean, and it's simply gorgeous. So every year, this trip gets bigger and better. And as you just mentioned, Jennifer and Jonathan are returning with us, and so many others, and you are going to want to be a part of this. The price that Apple Vacation has secured for this trip is incredible and exclusive to us, but it's only available for a limited time. Don't miss out. Sign up today when it's what? What do we have now? Minus 22 degrees? 23 degrees. Thank you, Mike Scott. 23 degrees, and I looked up in Nueva Vallarta, Mexico. It's going to be 82 degrees today.
So, wow.
Yeah.
That's a 100-degree difference.
Yeah, big difference. So
that's
come with
difference.
Us. Sign up for the trip. Go to 560theanswer.com/passport. That's 560theanswer.com/passport.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, CNN is getting into full 2020 mode. Had a town hall with Kamala Harris. You say Kamala, I say Kamala.
I actually watched a little bit of it, and then I fell asleep.
Jake Tapper moderated. They're full in for Kamala Harris or other Democrat socialists. So they actually just hired another one, Andrew Gillum.
He's a
CNN contributor now. How about that?
Well, Andrew Gillum, though, is still under investigation for some campaign fraud, right?
Not only is he under investigation, a Florida ethics panel last week found probable cause for ethics violations involving the former Tallahassee mayor, former Dem nominee for governor down there in Florida, meaning the civil investigation moves to the next step, but to a hearing before an administrative judge, and no word on whether or not the FBI is still interested in Andrew Gillum's exploits as mayor of Tallahassee. So we'll stay tuned to that. But here's Kamala Harris. You know, it's a race to the hard left. It's who can get past
Who could be more progressive?
Who can be more Maduroan, I would say, if we're really being honest. Here's a Kamala Harris putting her best foot forward in that direction. On the health insurance market, you know what the problem with the private health insurance market is? That it exists.
We have witnessed a case where a seated member of Congress acting in her I believe the solution, and I'm actually feel very strongly about this, is that we need to have Medicare for all. That's just the bottom line.
Who are those Iowans clapping?
This is, I think, why you're also asking this question. What we know is that to live in a civil society, to be true to the ideals and the spirit of who we say we are as a country, we have to appreciate and understand that access to health care it should not be thought of as a privilege. It should be understood to be a right.
Yeah, one of those new rights the left invented. So Tapper properly followed up with her on your Medicare for All, and specifically you mean no more private health insurance. It's all government directed, right?
I believe it will totally eliminate private insurance. So for people out there who like their insurance, they don't get to keep it?
Well, listen, the idea is that everyone gets access to medical care. And you don't have to go through the process of going through an insurance company, having them give you approval, going through the paperwork, all of the delay that may require. Who of us has not had that situation where you got to wait for approval and the doctor says, well, I don't know if your insurance company is going to cover this? Let's eliminate all of that. Let's move on.
Let's eliminate all that and you move on because, you know, the problem with insurance companies, there's a paperwork and bureaucracy.
Oh, there's none of that in government, though.
Correct.
No, not at all.
No.
No.
This is, you know, the adult consideration. Do insurance companies, do they ration? Yes, per the terms of their policy. Does government ration? Yes. And all of those single-payer, government-run health insurance / healthcare models that the left tries to invoke the world over, take a real good look at them for rationing. That is why the joke is of the Canadian system. The good news about that gallbladder surgery you need, it's free. The bad news is you're never going to get it.
Yeah.
That's the PGO Rourke summary of the Canadian system, and it has been that way for a long time. So the idea that government is more efficient and more competent in this space, something as important as your health care, you think the government is more efficient and more competent than private sector actors. Do you really? Well, Howard Schultz doesn't.
Yeah, he took her to task.
He had this to say on CBS this morning.
So what industry are we going to abolish next? The coffee industry? I mean, the Republicans want to get rid of the Affordable Care Act. I don't agree with that. The Affordable Care Act should stay and it should be refined. But to think we should get rid of the insurance industry... Again, this is exactly the situation. It's far too extremes on both sides, and the silent majority of America does not have a voice.
If
and that's the voice
you
I want to
have
give.
A winning-
yeah, the problem with Howard Schultz, of course, is he just wants to slow walk the country to the same destination. For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by Steve Moore, Wall Street Journal columnist, chief economist for CNN. Steve, thanks for joining us. Congratulations on Andrew Gillum joining your team over there at CNN.
Well, good morning, guys. And by the way, I was over at CNN the night that that interview was going on with Kamala Harris. And the interesting thing about it was I didn't know much about her. I'd never really seen her. And I thought she, you know, throughout the interview, I watched most of it. I didn't watch the whole thing. You know, she was very impressive. She was just, you know, she's quick on her feet and, you know, was just the way she reacted with the audience was good. I thought, wow, she's the real thing. And then I saw that moment, you know, that you just played. And I said, whoop, she's done. There is no way, you know, we're not a socialist country. I pray that we haven't moved that far to the left. Is it really true that the Democrats in 2020 are going to, their message is going to be to the American people, you know, we don't care if you like your health insurance plan. We're putting you in this new one. I mean, at least Barack Obama, as you may recall, remember when he was selling us the fraud of Obamacare, at least the rhetoric. Remember this, guys? It was, if you like your health care, you get to keep it.
Right.
Well, Democrats have thrown that. They're not even pretending you can keep your health care if you like it. And incidentally, I looked at the at some of the polling numbers. It turns out about 75% of people who have employer-based health care, as I do, like the coverage that they have. They don't want Medicare for all. They want their own system. But I think what this speaks to is a broader point about what's happening with the left in America and the Democratic Party, that it has become almost Stalinistic in its view of you know, we don't care if you want to do A, we're going to force you to do B. And that is so true when it comes to healthcare, when it comes to education. They don't want people to have choices. They don't want competition. They want government to run it. And that is a losing message with the American people.
They just want to hand out free stuff and we'll take care of your, you know, student loans and all that crazy stuff, liberal gobbledygook, as I call it. But Howard Schultz, I mean, if he does run as an independent, don't you think that guarantees President Trump a second term in the White House?
I don't know a lot about him. I liked what he said. Well, I mean, I liked at least half of what he said when he really called out Kamala Harris for her ridiculous, preposterous proposal to take away everyone's health care. But look, I think the more... if you get an independent candidate like a Bloomberg or, you know, the CEO of Starbucks, I think it almost guarantees the election of Donald Trump. And that's why Democrats are absolutely having a hissy fit right now about this. They are terrified of the idea of some kind of third party candidate like Bloomberg. By the way, Bloomberg's pissed off because he beat him to the punch, because
yes,
I think Bloomberg
right.
was thinking about running as an independent as well. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting race right now, but I'll make a prediction. I think Kamala Harris took herself out of the race with that statement that she made the other night.
I want to go to other contenders for the throne on the left. I read a piece by Katrina Vandenhoevel in the Bezos Post that Elizabeth Warren has come up with a big idea that could be a real game changer. Her wealth tax. 2% of assets over $50 million, and this is a big idea. This is great.
By the way, Dan, that's just going to kill me.
I understand exactly. that's why we're talking
suffer.
To you. This is somebody who actually would be affected. It turns out Switzerland has something like this. It's not set the way that Warren would want to set it federally. It's set through regional governments. But what they found in Switzerland is that with every tenth of a percentage point increase in taxes on wealth, the wealth reported by taxpayers dropped by 3.5%. So like a 35x response to a increase in the wealth tax in Switzerland. You know, people respond to incentives, but this is a big idea for Elizabeth Warren. She's trying to get to the left of Ocasio-Cortez, of Kamala Harris and the rest. How about that wealth tax on people making more than $50 million or above their $50 million threshold? This is just equitable. Who needs more than $50 million?
Yeah, well, there aren't that many people who have more than $50 million. I mean, maybe there's LeBron James, there's Bill Gates, there's Warren Buffett. You know, there's not that many. So it's not even about raising money. I mean, you're not going to raise any money from a wealth tax. It's a greed and envy tax. And by the way, a wealth tax is just a tax on the money that you save, right? You know, if you save your money, guess what? You have wealth. If you build up a business, you have wealth. Oh, no, we can't have that. We can't have people saving and building up their wealth and investing in businesses. We have to take it away. But what they will find when they try to do these things, and by the way, Amy put it very well, that what you've got now on the Democrat side of the aisle is these people crawling all over each other, clawing each other to get to the left of the person in front of them. I mean, it's who can raise taxes the most and who can provide the most dingbat healthcare program where the government's going to run the whole thing and it's going to be on and on and on. And by the way, you know, I would just look at the Chicago school system. I mean, you want to see a model of efficiency, right? I mean,
yeah.
You can't find much better
That's
than
right.
the way that the government has run the schools in Washington, D.C. and Chicago. So, you know, this is a race to the left. And I don't say this with any joy. I mean, when I moved to this town 30 years ago, there were level-headed Democrats like Bill Bradley and Dick Gephardt and Sam Nunn and, you know, Lloyd Benson and people like that. Those people would never be Democrats today. I mean, they're way too – and the real problem with the party is it's these young Turks – you know, that are the worst. It used to be the old bulls we had to worry about. The old bulls are conservative compared to these young socialist as I said earlier, they're Stalinistic in the way they want to kind of transform everything in America.
But wait a second. For these people making more than $50 million in assets, 2% above $50 million, 3% assets over a billion, that's just 75,000 households that would be affected.
Wow.
In a country of 330 million people. And it would raise, according to Elizabeth Warren's economists, that's a funny statement.
Right, that is funny. How much?
$2.75 trillion over 10 years. Think of all the damage you could do with that $2.75 trillion in government spending. So, but what about that? You know, why should
Wait, did you say $2.75 billion or trillion?
Trillion.
Trillion. Good luck with that. I mean,
well,
you know, people,
these are Elizabeth Warren's economists. I mean, who can question them?
But what liberals don't understand is people get really, really rich. For the most part, are not very stupid. You're not going to be able to. You're looking. They'll look all over the place for that $50 million, and they're never going to find it because Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, those people, they all have their money hidden away in these big trusts. You're not going to get any money from that tax. It's all about just bashing the rich because they're evil because they were successful and achieved the American dream. That's what this is all about. We should call it the American Dream Tax.
Ah, I like that. Oh, that's a good response. All right. We'll workshop that. Steve Moore, Wall Street Journal columnist, CNN chief economist. Steve,
how cold is it there?
It's so cold. Chicago politicians have their hands in their own pockets. Hey-o. Thanks, Steve. See ya.
It's minus 23. And Stephen Moore, join us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Taking your how cold is it jokes all morning. Johnny Carson style preferred. Also, Mike Scott has been updating you, as have some of our listeners, about power outages in the area.
Wind chill right now, what, minus 42 degrees?
It's a little nippy out.
No, honestly, it takes, because I walked somebody's dog earlier this morning, and I walked outside. It literally took my breath away. And you have to have everything covered. That's why I have goggles, because I don't want the corneas of my eyes to be destroyed.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, it's true.
Yeah.
This is scary. This is deadly, serious stuff out there. That's why it's a state of emergency for Illinois, Wisconsin, and Minnesota.
If you have no power, it's a deadly emergency. If you're just a couple of candy asses in studio like us, and you go to your car, and then you go to the next one, so, come on.
Well,
don't make a big
thing
about
outside.
It.
You have heated. You've covered heated parking where you live, so we had about a 70-degree difference between our starts this morning.
Well,
no, it's all right. I mean, it's all right. Just put vegetable oil on your door so that you can open up your car door. It doesn't freeze. And you'll be all right.
Nobody needs to do that except you.
I did it.
I mean, I've never heard that before.
Really?
Nobody has ever heard that before.
That's not true. Mike's heard about it. When I lived in northern Minnesota, they did that. Plus, we had a charger to heat our car. We had to pay $15 a month.
Now there
is plug
that.
our car into the heater.
Have you heard about anybody doing that this century?
Not vegetable oil.
Yeah.
But what?
No.
Baby oil, then?
No, mineral oil or a silicone spray. Yeah. Silicone spray is the best.
Yeah. Well, that's all right.
Yeah, vegetable oil will still freeze on you, though.
No, it hasn't frozen.
Okay.
That's good. I'm glad.
All right, you hosers from the Great White North, you take up these home remedies some other time. Anyway.
Silicon spray is not a home remedy.
If you have any updates in your area, of course, call in or text in.
Yes, please.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636DA, turnkey.pro. Text line. Let us know what's going on in your locale so we can spread the word in case others are in need of any assistance in this bitter cold. But now we switch gears and do what we're supposed to do, which is talk a little bit about politics and policy. And we've got a State of the Union address coming up next week. The Democrats have slated one of their losing candidates from 2018 to give the Democrat response. That should be interesting. But even before that, you got Trump's pre-Super Bowl interview on Sunday. He's agreed to sit down with CBS. What is he going to say? Will he have a deal in place by then or by his February 5th State of the Union address? For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by our friend Ed Morrissey, senior editor for HotAir.com and columnist for The Week. Ed, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Oh, good morning. I managed to thaw out enough to be on the phone today. It's great.
Good. You use the silicone spray then or the mineral oil?
The silicone.
Yeah.
Silicone spray is the way to go, man. It's all the right. way to go.
There you go. So we've seen some reports on nearly three dozen House Democrats come, including Sherry Bustos here from Illinois, coming to Nancy Pelosi saying, let's do a deal. We're not opposed to funding for some sort of border barrier. Mark Warner, Democrat from Virginia on the Senate side, has essentially said the same, even though, of course, they're simultaneously critical of Trump. Republicans, one report out yesterday, seem to have given Trump the green light to invoke emergency powers if there is no deal, begrudgingly so. So are we on the cusp of a deal? Does something get done on the Hill before February 5th?
Well, you know, I think that there's certainly room here for it. I mean, the deal out there has been out there for at least a year, which is some sort of border wall funding for some sort of DACA extension or normalization. And, you know, the bigger you go on DACA, the bigger you got to go on the border wall. That's a deal that could have been made a year ago when Chuck Schumer drove the shutdown. And it didn't get made because the courts sort of hit the brakes on considering whether DACA was constitutional or not and took the pressure off of getting a decision made. So with another shutdown looming, you got to think that there's at least some room for that. But the shutdown was not popular. Another shutdown will be less popular. And the emergency declaration is basically a way to the practical result of an emergency declaration will be that the courts will have to deal with it for probably several months, maybe into a couple of years, which means that the funding probably won't generate before the end of Donald Trump's first term.
Well, do you know, I mean, there's already, what, 652 miles of a wall in place so far? So when you have people like Nancy Pelosi coming up and saying, oh, walls are immoral, is she not aware of the fact that there are barriers in place in certain cities?
It's a great question, Amy, and when Democrats are pressed on that, because they have been on a couple of occasions, they say, well, if border walls are immoral, should we tear down the ones that we already have? And they'll say, oh, no, we don't want to do that. The Border Patrol, the Customs and Border Protection Department, are the ones that are asking for more barriers down there, and they're not looking for a 1,900-mile wall. But they have specific areas in mind that they need the barrier up in order to redirect human traffic into an area that they can patrol easier. And I think that that message is getting through. And Democrats started suggesting that they'd be willing to negotiate once the shutdown was over. They didn't want to negotiate in a shutdown. So they've got 3 weeks now to prove that that's what that they were serious about, that they were willing to negotiate if the government was reopened. And so we'll see. I do think that there's some room here. Maybe what you land on is half of the money, you know, rather than $5.7 billion, it's somewhere closer to $3 billion or $2.5 billion, so that both sides can save a little face here. But I do think that there is at least some room here to get some of the border wall funding that Trump is looking for.
The Marxist du jour this week is Kamala Harris. You know, handicap the Dem side of the race with her formal entrance and her getting some in-kind support from CNN against the backdrop of the prospect of a Howard Schultz or a Bloomberg, one or both, running as independents.
Yeah, no, this is really interesting because what happened on Monday when Kamala Harris declared that not only was she for Medicare for All but for eliminating private health insurance is that most of the people in her party came out against that. CNN, in fact, has a story up this morning that rounds up reaction to that where Dianne Feinstein, Dick Durbin, others, Gary Peters, are coming out and saying that's not what we're for. Tim Kaine, they're talking about adding a Medicaid public option maybe to Obamacare or doing what they call Medicare for More, which is offering it as a buy-in for 55 and older and maybe some first responders. But they're not in favor of eliminating private insurers. So I think she climbed way out in a limb there and has sort of set the mark now for the progressive left in this race. And now everybody else can kind of run a little bit to her right and look more moderate and thoughtful. And that includes Elizabeth Warren and Cory Booker, both of whom declined to endorse Kamala Harris's suggestion for Monday night. So I think she really put herself out on a limb. On the other hand, Kamala Harris is from California. She's the only one so far. Gavin Newsom might get in, but she's the only one from California. California is a big ATM state for Democrats. Got a lot of money coming out of California. California moved their state up in the primaries now, so it's the biggest state with the biggest delegate selection that's going to go early in the primary election, and that is going to benefit Harris if no other Californian is in the race. So you can't discount her, but I think she might have shot herself a little bit in the foot on Monday.
And then also we learned this morning that the mayor of Los Angeles is not going to be running. And Garcetti. That he's not going to be running for president. But how soon do you think Biden or Clinton decide to make their big announcements?
Well, there's another thing about Hillary Clinton mentioned earlier this week, too, that she was still considering it. The Hill has a really interesting post up this morning. I'm just reading through it, actually, where several Democrats go on record basically saying it's a bad idea and she shouldn't do it. And I think that that's a really strong message back to her that the party is no longer going to be the Clintons' party. And so I don't know that Hillary Clinton's really going to get into it. Joe Biden, I think he's going to have to make a decision pretty quick. I mean, starting to fill up here, and he would make a big splash if he got in, but he's got to get in at some point early enough to where donors and organizers will rally to his banner rather than get jobs someplace else.
One of the big issues the Democrat Socialists are taking up is more redundant gun control legislation or vestigial gun control measures. Kamala Harris took on the issue in the sentimental fashion the left does on the CNN town hall. But if this is against the backdrop of this report issued yesterday by law enforcement, so basically concluding they have no idea why the Las Vegas shooter did what he did. And so isn't that interesting, the limits of our understanding of our ability to control the human condition or to correct dysfunction in the human condition? And yet, what is the left's argument? By banning assault weapons as we define them, we're going to stop the next Vegas shooter. Can you stop something if you don't know why it happened in the first place?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, and I find it very puzzling that somebody would go to all that trouble and not really leave any indications as to all that evil that he did. And there was a ton of preparation that he put into this, and without any idea as to what the purpose of this was. I mean, it's just evil. He was just evil. And I don't know that that's something that you can deal with in terms of like prevention. He didn't break any laws coming up to that point. He bought his weapons legally, and he went through the background checks that people are insisting that will prevent, you know, crime in the future. And I'm for background checks, but it doesn't stop things like this. And most of these incidents that you hear about are incidents where either the weapons were stolen or the person legitimately passed a background check. Background checks don't stop this type of stuff. What stops this type of stuff is, frankly, better mental health screening and better mental health service availability. And even then, the person has to seek the help. This is just part of the human condition, and I think that part of the reason...
Oh, Ed, you're continuing to cling to this antiquated Christian notion that evil exists in the world. Oh, come on.
Are you calling me a bitter clinger?
Ed Morrissey, senior editor for HotAir.com, columnist for the week. Ed, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Another black eye for Chicago?
Yeah, but first real quick.
Oh, yeah,
sorry. Ralph and Rantoul has a cat question. And so since you're here, we better get it asked and answered. Ralph and Rantoul.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Amy, I'm not a cat expert, don't have any cats, but if you go outside on a day like today and you throw a cat really high in the air,
when it
falls to the ground frozen, will it still land on its feet?
It's an excellent question.
You guys are so mean. You know, there's 200,000 feral cats in Chicago, and their lives are on the line today. Who cares?
Because they're being thrown up in the air?
No, because of this frigid, this death-defying weather that we have.
Well, can you answer Ralph's question?
No, Ralph, the cat will land on all fours.
Even frozen?
Not frozen. Won't be frozen. Just be sad.
It's interesting. Learned something about felines today.
Well, you're calling them catsicles.
Well,
that's very rude. I tried to capture mine yesterday, and I couldn't do it. I'm going in with a with a tranquilizer gun.
You should
get a dart in their neck.
You should have built a Romville for cats, like they have on Lower Wacker for humans.
Yeah.
Where you just so they could shelter in place.
Yeah, I'm trying. But even it's so cold in there.
Oh, I think that cat fell down into a well. Oh, well, that may provide some shelter. Although
the thing is, I can catch one easily, but I don't want to leave it.
You can catch one easily. Do you have a net or something?
No,
he
trusts me. There's a little level of trust, but I don't want to leave him with the feral cat that'll scratch my eyes out in the bin there. So I don't know what to do. Do you want to come over today? Help me?
No, I don't. Not going to do that. The experience last night was no raccoons, but no feral cats. Though.
Well, yeah, because I lock the cats in the garage now so that the raccoons can't partake in the free water.
Well, so you did save cats.
Well, they're there, but I don't know if they're going to be there this time. I really want to get home. I'm anxious because I want to make sure that they're alive because it's going to be it's minus 23 right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they can survive that.
All right. A very special, emotional morning answer. Thanks a lot, Ral, for breaking down Amy. You couldn't just leave it alone.
No, you couldn't.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
If you're talking about it, I'll be talking about it. Dennis Prager here. Join me this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. It's so cold.
How cold is it?
Richard Simmons is wearing shorts that come nearly to the half thigh region. the Carson classic.
Yeah.
Richard Simmons, not exactly current. But that's a fun
know
one.
Who he is.
All right.
Yeah, taking your cold jokes all morning long.
Yeah.
Text him into 64636, type in DA.
And your ComEd updates, so less funny. Yeah, people suffering power outages, not good. Well, Mike Scott's been on that story as well. So
and it's all over Warrenville, Bolingbrook. It's thousands of people.
And southwest suburbs, too. We heard from Oak Lawn and areas around there. So we'll keep you updated. But moving right along to this interesting story, Julie Royce, she's a well-known Christian author, speaker, blogger, podcaster, radio talk show host, Renaissance woman. She's a journalist and author here in Chicago. She's produced a special broadcast that's airing on our sister station, AM 1160, WILL, AM 1160, Wednesday night at 6 p.m., Wednesday night tonight, Church in Crisis. It's also airing on four other Salem stations across the country, Atlanta, Dallas, L.A., Colorado Springs. She's been doing significant reporting on the scandal at Harvest Bible Chapel megachurch in the Northwest Burbs. And
yeah, it's in Rolling Meadows.
Right. Specifically, it's Pastor James McDonald. The special broadcast I mentioned that's tonight at 6 p.m. on YLL covers that scandal, as well as the Willow Creek scandal and several other prominent evangelical megachurch pastors who've had scandals in the past years. And not all scandals are created equally, so we want to distinguish the two. I mentioned the Harvest Bible Chapel scandal with McDonald in the vernacular, sort of the Me Too within the clergy, but it's not really. That's not really. It's most of the, at least the reporting I've seen, revolves around alleged financial improprieties and management style, and more so than, again, with McDonald, anything I've read, at least, that has anything to do with inappropriate conduct towards women or others of a sexual nature. But for more on her special and this topic generally, we're pleased to be joined by Julie Royce. Julie, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, great to be with you.
So just kind of lay out the case with respect to McDonald and Harvest Bible and what exactly happened, is alleged to have happened, and where things stand within that church.
Yeah, well, the first thing that happened is that they filed a lawsuit against me and four other defendants. And this is when I was working on my investigative report for World Magazine. And I actually, at that point, hadn't published anything. Wow. It was sort of a preemptive move. And so that was the first thing that made headlines. But then in December, I published a World Magazine expose on Harvest Bible Chapel and reporting about things, like you mentioned, Dan, a culture of fear and intimidation there. And incidents of bullying that were reported by former elders and staff there, but also financial improprieties. For example, just one of the examples was that McDonald has a broadcast ministry called Walk in the Word, and I discovered that they had actually spent money that had been donated to Walk in the Word, this broadcast ministry, to actually fund a whitetail trophy deer herd up at a camp that they have in Michigan. So, I mean, there's people donating to a broadcast ministry and their money going instead of, to buy airtime for a deer herd. So kind of some wild stuff going on. So after that, that created quite a bit of stir. And then Harvest actually pulled their Walk in the Word broadcast off of about 2,000 radio and TV stations. Again, I think that may have been a preemptive move. A lot of station managers saying that they were going to pull the program anyway. And then just recently, Harvest said they were going to put James McDonald, their senior pastor, on an indefinite sabbatical from teaching and leadership in Chicago. But they have 7 campuses in Chicago. They have an 8th campus in Naples, Florida, and they said, well, he could keep preaching and teaching down there. The pastor, the lead pastor of the campus down in Naples, objected to that and said, you know what, if McDonald isn't fit to preach in Chicago, he's not fit to preach at my congregation down here in Naples, and he didn't want him to preach there. Well, and actually asked to be removed from being under Harvest, and for that, he just got fired from Harvest doing that.
What did he do? What did Pastor James McDonald do?
What did he do? Well, again, there's a number of accounts of bullying. For example, there's an account that a former elder's wife told me about where he had put up pictures of elder's wives up on a wall and shot it with a pellet gun, and this was discovered by some folks. But other folks saying, you know, he's creating just a culture of dread and fear among the staff there. But again, there's also the financial issues, and one of them is him saying that he was going to downsize from a 6,700 square foot home that he owned. He used to own Senator Peter Fitzgerald's home. Then it turned out, after he said that, it was discovered that he had built an actually larger home, a 6,900 square foot home with a 10 car garage and a 2,000 square foot finished basement. And this is, again, after he told his congregation he was going to downsize. So also allegations of some deception and not being very forthright with the congregation.
And so it's sort of this, maybe this is too strong a comparison, but a James Baker or Creo Dollar or whatever these guys, these televangelist guys are that live the lifestyle of the rich and famous on the contributions of their congregants. And if you're not transparent about it, then people legitimately have a problem with it.
Yeah, there's a number of allegations. And again, there was a very public excommunication of 8 former elders back in 2013. And it turns out, and I discovered this in my investigating, that they got excommunicated after they had sent a letter to the current, after these former elders sent a letter to the current sitting elders saying that James McDonald lacked the qualifications given in Scripture and had some disqualifying qualifications like love of money and outbursts of anger and things like this. And for reporting him to the elder board, the 2 sitting elders that were still, not sitting, former elders that were still at the congregation actually got excommunicated. So, I mean, there's just sort of, again, a culture when you talk to the former elders, the former staff, of just a character flaws in the pastor that aren't being addressed. And, again, I think the Jim Baker thing is probably a decent comparison with the way that the money is being dealt with.
And the reason that you chose to pursue investigating this case and other cases is what? Is basically sort of being a good steward of your own, essentially being an accountability check within your own Christian circles, as opposed to waiting for or allowing the D.C. press corps or somebody or the Chicago press corps in this case to do something about it, is that, you know, we should mind our own shops. Is that sort of the disposition?
Well, yeah, Scripture says that judgment begins with the house of God. And I think when there's situations, 1 Timothy 5:20, for example, says that if you have an elder who is sinning, that you should publicly expose him so that others may take warning.
Yeah.
And so when people came to me and started telling me about these stories of abuse and wrongdoing there, I mean, it wasn't something I really wanted to report on, per se, but I felt like there was somewhat of a duty to once people started sharing these stories with me. And really, tonight, the special that I'm producing isn't about just dredging up every bad thing that's happened at Harvest, or, you know, Willow Creek has had sort of its Me Too movement. There have been other Sovereign Grace churches for 6 years has been embroiled in, you know, whether or not they reported sex abuse correctly. There's been a lot of this in the church, and really I'm trying to look for in interviewing people that can help us process that and really bring some redemptive solutions and look at, okay, what's happening in the evangelical church that we're having so many of these scandals, and how can we fix it? What's wrong, you know? And so that's really the hope with the program.
Yeah, I mean, I'm Catholic. I wish my church would have done that a lot sooner than it did with respect to the sex abuse scandal in the Catholic Church. So, I mean, this is what you're supposed to do when wrongdoing is brought to your attention. So, you know, I applaud you for doing that.
Well, thanks. And again, it is that hope to bring solutions and not just to wallow in the muck of it. But and I think we achieved that. Just some really great guests. I have Vonda Dyer on with me. She was one of the people, one of the women who actually came forward with an allegation of sexual harassment at Willow Creek against a pastor there, Bill Hybels. But even to hear how she's processed through that and come to the other side. I also have one of the former elders at Harvest Bible Chapel who was excommunicated in 2013 and has since gone through somewhat of a reconciliation process, but also saying, yeah, that didn't really happen. But his story of how he's processed through that, and then just some interesting commentary from someone who's with a ministry called Nine Marks that really tries to help equip pastors and church leaders to build healthy churches. So I think we need to take these moments and not just throw stones, but really try to look for constructive solutions.
Well, the special is tonight, 6 p.m. on our sister station, YLL AM 1160. And it involves two mega churches, two huge congregations in Chicago, Harvest Bible Chapel, as well as Willow Creek, as was mentioned. She is Julie Royce, Christian author, speaker, blogger, podcaster, radio talk show host, and investigative journalist who's done the work on Harvest Bible Chapel. And you can catch her program again tonight, 6 p.m. on AM 1160 WYLL. Julie, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
This just in, John Kasich is a real ruling class prick. Boy, what a surprise. John Kasich, per a comedian, some equally obnoxious comedian named Julie Klausner, Hulu sitcom Difficult People, don't know it.
Never heard of it.
Anyway, she's sitting on an Alaska Airlines flight, so is John Kasich, and John Kasich gets bumped for a pilot that needed to be on that plane.
Oh, to be transported to another city to fly a plane.
Yeah, yeah. The pilot needed to fly last minute aboard the plane, bumped Kasich out of his seat, but instead of taking the downgraded seat he was assigned, he took this Julie Klausner's seat. The funny thing about it, she said, when I tweeted about it, I realized both sides hate him. Just having interacted with him or interacted near him, I never met anyone so, I don't know why it's blanked out, douchey and obnoxious and just dripping with disdain for people who in his mind aren't as important as he is. I hope he goes away forever. He sucks. Yeah.
Wow.
I think there's a lot of people who could get behind that statement with respect to Kasich, but the whole ruling class mentality, I mean, Kasich sort of does drip that ruling class mentality, probably has something to do with being in public office for the better part of two decades.
Yeah, but if you paid for a first class seat, you should have the right to sit in that seat. I hate when they do that.
He got reassigned, you know, Alaska Airlines, he got reassigned. You know, for a pilot that's got to make the trip, that's got to be on that flight, So you make some accommodations. You know, I mean, is it really that much? No, they weren't saying, you know, they didn't throw him off the flight. He's got to catch another flight. They didn't change his schedule. They just said, you know, you got to take a little bit of a less comfortable seat. Big deal. Who are you? You know? I mean, you're a sort of John Kasich-y on planes. I know.
Where were they flying from where to where?
You're the person who had David Dow pulled off that plane. That's you. That was you, wasn't it? Yeah.
Well, I need to know how far the flight, how long the flight was.
People, like, you have problems with people's cologne. You want them thrown off the flight. Yeah. You have problems with people's size. You want them thrown off the flight.
Mm-hmm. No, I want them to buy two seats.
When we go on our, radio station.
It's called Passport to Paradise.
Yeah, when we do that.
Taste of Freedom. Yes.
There's
breathing freedom in Mexico.
We start with a full plane. By the time we take off, there's, six of us left.
I have to go home.
I am a little demanding. Like the extra legroom. And if I pay for something, I want to get it. How long was the flight?
New York to San Francisco.
Oh, that is...
5 hours?
That's almost a six-hour flight. No way in the world would I give up a first-class seat on that. No, thank you. Absolutely not.
How about for an extra bag of peanuts?
No. They'd have to pay me... They'd have to reimburse me the money that I spent on the first-class seat. I would not move.
What if they let you...
I wouldn't move.
What if they let you sit with Bunky? You could bring your dog with you.
I don't care. Funky doesn't sit in.
You wouldn't
coach.
Move.
Funky sits
pilot,
in first class.
A pilot needs to be in the seat. We don't have any first class seats. You would not move.
Nope. The pilot could sit in the back. It's his problem. If he doesn't know how to get his way to work, that's not my problem. Sorry, buddy. He can sit in the back or he can sit in the jump seat, which flight attendants do when they are out of position and they need to get to the cities and there's not enough seats. So he doesn't have to be any different than a flight attendant.
That response draws to mind Julie Klausner's comment on Jen Kasich. I don't know. I hope he goes away forever. He sucks.
So bad. Jeez. What are you going to do to stay warm today, Dan?
I'm going to wear my hat. I've got a lot of comments on my hat of people watching on the stream. None of them are complimentary.
Worst. Well, first of all, it needs to be washed, or you need to get the dog hair off of it. And I can't believe how much you pay to join Olympia Fields. That's the best they can do?
Well, they didn't give me this hat with my membership. I don't know. I got this hat somewhere along the line.
And it says Olympia Fields on it?
Yeah. I'm going to wear it tomorrow, too, because it's going to be sub-zero tomorrow.
I don't get the problem with the hat.
Right, thank you, Mike.
He looks like one of the Smurfs. You look like Sweepy Surf.
Not far now, Papa Smurf.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.